Sponsored in part by Eli Lilly and Company. Do you think you might have migraine? Talk to your healthcare professional about your symptoms, the number of days they impact your life, and which treatment options might be best for you. Learn more at thinkmigraine.com. And the American Brain Foundation. For over 30 years, the foundation has worked with researchers to discover better treatment, prevention, and cures for brain diseases and disorders. Imagine life without brain disease. Learn more at AmericanBrainFoundation.org. Rethreaded offers hope and a fresh start to survivors of human trafficking right here in Jacksonville. None of us should be defined by the worst things that happen to us. Learn more about how you can unlock the potential of survivors at Rethreaded.com. And by Neurelis, a leading neuroscience company focused on the development and commercialization of therapeutics for the treatment of epilepsy and other neurologic disorders. The company's unique drug portfolio strives to address unmet needs in patient care. Learn more at Neurelis.com.
Take a listen to the following songs and guess what healthcare theme we're talking about today.
Summertime, and the living is easy.
There's no business like show business, like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing.
Here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right. Little darling, it's been a...
Hi, I'm Dr. Joe Servin, a practicing neurologist at Mayo Clinic and professor of healthcare administration and policy at Arizona State University. This is What's Health Got to Do with It, which looks at where and how healthcare intersects with your life, helping you get the medical answers you want. But first, the answers to our musical quiz, and in order. First song, George Gershwin's Summertime. Ethel Merman's There's No Business Like Show Business. George Harrison's Here Comes the Sun. And Celia Cruz's La Vida es un Carnival. What do these brilliant folks have in common? They all succumbed to brain tumors. So today we're delving into the intricate realm of brain cancer, a formidable adversary in modern medicine. Overall, the chance that a person will develop a malignant tumor of the brain or spinal cord in their lifetime is less than 1%. Still, about 25,000 malignant tumors of the brain or spinal cord will be diagnosed in the U.S. So from its elusive origins to groundbreaking treatments, we explore the challenges and triumphs in battling this complex disease. Today, we're going to share insights into the latest advancements, promising therapies, and the ongoing quest for a cure. Joining us to aid us in our journey for answers is Dr. Rich Byrne. He is an internationally renowned brain tumor neurosurgeon at Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida. He is joining us now in studio. Dr. Byrne, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much for having me.
And I might add, welcome to Florida.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So where are you coming from? Chicago, is that right?
Yes. In fact, I was in practice at Rush University Medical Center in Chicago for 27 years. I was department chairman for 18 years. And I finally decided to make a big move, both personally and professionally, to come and join Mayo Clinic in Florida. And this has a history that goes back to when I was 8 years old and came to Florida the first time, and I said, why don't I live there?
Well, I'm glad that it took, even though it took a while, it's good to have you here.
Yeah, it took me a half century to move on that, but I finally did. And my wife's a big Florida fan, too, so we're glad to be here. And I've always been a fan of the Mayo system as well and have lots of friends in Mayo, and there was a need, and here I am.
That is fantastic. Well, let's delve into the topic that we're talking about today, and let's set the stage. We're talking about brain tumors, brain cancer. Maybe I should start there. Can you differentiate brain tumor versus brain cancer just as a general start for the audience?
Sure. So when we're talking about tumors, we're just talking about neoplastic growths, in other words, cells that grew out of control. And the differentiation between a benign tumor and a malignant tumor is malignant tumors are more likely to grow quickly, they're more likely to spread, they're more likely to cause trouble and fatality. However, benign brain tumors aren't necessarily friendly. Benign tumors can cause big problems based on where they are. I mean, tumors are a lot like real estate. We judge them on location and size. So the tumor that I did all day yesterday was benign, but its location was horrible and its size was big. So it was an all-day operation, and thankfully, you know, it put up a good fight, but we won.
Great.
But that was a benign tumor that 50 years ago would have been fatal. But today, it just required a long day in the operating room, and the patient's recovering today.
So if I'm hearing you right, it's not just the cell that makes up the tumor that's the problem, but it's also where it is in the brain that's the problem.
That's right. I mean, it depends on what is it pushing up against, what dysfunction is it causing, and it can be anything from local pressure to swelling to seizures to headache, fluid obstructions. There's all sorts of things that these can cause. But I'm pleased to say that a lot of the tumors that we actually see in practice are of the benign nature. So the ones I saw this morning and the ones I'll see in clinic today, more tumors that we see are benign rather than malignant. And a lot of them just need to be followed with MRI scans because they're incidental findings. Someone has a headache and we find a small tumor and we reassure them, we have them back and just keep an eye on it. And if it ever misbehaves, then we go in and take it out. But a lot of them just need to be watched. And the benign ones that get big and cause trouble, well, then they need treatment. And that treatment might be focused radiation or it might be intraoperative surgery to remove the mass. The malignant tumors are the ones that are just devastating for patients at times. It's difficult for the treatment team, too, because we don't like to see anyone suffer and we want to cure everything. In fact, that's what got me into neuro-oncology in the first place. A lecture 3 decades ago at Northwestern Medical School where the neuro-oncologist essentially threw his hands up and said, I don't have a solution for this. And it drew me into the field. I wanted to be part of that solution. So I think a lot of people feel that way who get into neuro-oncology. You see this situation. You just want to intervene. You want to do what you can.
Let me get to a very fundamental basics. There's so many people who may have a headache. Maybe you could, and then they wonder, is this the beginning of something? What are the common symptoms? Is it headache? Or what do you see as what people should know or is something that they should worry about that maybe they need to see someone like you?
I would say the first thing to do is not to worry so much because brain tumors, as you pointed out, are not that common. So the vast majority of headaches are completely unrelated to any sort of growth in the brain. They're, you know, migraine headaches, tension headaches, medication related or medication withdrawal. There's a lot of different reasons why people get headache. Brain tumor is only one of those more rare causes. And it's typically just the tumors that have gotten to a size that they are putting pressure on adjacent structures that cause headache. So headache is one cause. Seizure is another. Nausea. There are tumors at the base of the skull, like in the pituitary gland, that can cause hormone disruption, either by over-secreting hormones or causing under-secretion of hormones. So those are some of the symptoms that might come up. And then rarely you'll have a tumor that's large enough that's causing the eyeball to move forward or some other unusual manifestation. But the most common presentation for a brain tumor in 2024 is an incidentally noted brain tumor discovered because someone got an MRI for some other reason.
Which is wow, is the first thing I'd say to that. But I think you're hitting on something I want to follow up with. is MRI the, is that how this is all diagnosed?
Yes. I mean, a lot of tumors can be seen on CT scan as well. And in fact, people might have a CT scan after they've had a head injury, and then they'll see a small something or other. And then the MRI just shows more detail. So it's just a better study to give us a better clue as to what the brain lesion is.
What are the risk factors that make someone more prone to having it? I know I'll bring up one that I still get questions about, cell phones. But is number one, debunk that, or is that something we need to worry about? And are there other risk factors?
Sure. I'll start off with cell phones because that is a common question. Cell phones emit radiation, a very, very, very small dose of radiation. So you think radiation might cause tumors, so that's something to think about. But cell phones currently are classified as a class 2B carcinogen. So what does that mean? Mm-hmm. It means that there's a small chance that small dose of radiation might cause some trouble, not just in the head, but anywhere. And that's more of a problem for kids than it is for adults. But to put it into context, a class 2B carcinogen also includes things like coffee and gas. So when you stop gassing up your car and put your coffee away, then you might consider worrying about your cell phone.
Okay. I thank you for putting that in nice context there. Let me go to another risk factor. We'll often get a question from a relative of someone who has had a brain tumor. Is there a role of genetics that tie into if my family, some family member had a brain tumor, I'm more at risk?
And the answer to that is yes and no, and it depends on what kind of tumor. Now, the biggest risk factor for having a brain tumor is having a malignant tumor elsewhere in your body.
Okay.
So if you have lung cancer or a breast cancer or a melanoma or some other kidney cancer, those tumors can metastasize. The tumor cells can break off and then go through the bloodstream and lodge in the brain. So that is a major risk factor for a brain tumor, even though it's a tumor cell that derived from somewhere else. As far as the risk factors for, let's say, primary brain malignancy, a thing we call glioma, there really aren't that many. It's thought that perhaps petroleum products might be a risk factor from an environmental standpoint. There are case studies of families who had more gliomas than others. There are rare disorders like a thing called neurofibromatosis that might lead to all sorts of different sorts of tumors, gliomas and otherwise. But those are relatively rare. Almost all of the gliomas are what we call sporadic. In other words, not clearly linked to familial genetics, but just somebody developed it because a cell misdivided one day and then kept dividing. And that's essentially what creates a tumor.
And to all of our listeners out there, you're listening to What's Health Got to Do With It on WJCT News 89.9. I'm Dr. Joe Servin. If you're just joining us, we're talking about brain tumors, and we want to hear from you. If you have an idea for future shows, tag me on X or LinkedIn at Jay Servin. You know, Dr. Byrne, when I bring up brain tumor to anybody, on a social basis, not that the conversation comes up often, oftentimes the conversation switches to, oh, isn't that what John McCain died of, what Ted Kennedy died of? In other words, it's almost like defined by a death. So my question to that is, are we making progress? Are there advancements that have shifted, you know, that type of conversation where you hear it and it immediately goes into that type of mindset?
So the sort of tumor that those two individuals had is a thing called glioblastoma, which is the most aggressive form of glioma. Glioma is a tumor of the intrinsic cells of the brain. Most gliomas are not that aggressive. So we're talking about the most extreme case of glioma. And yes, that is a troubling diagnosis difficult to cure, we can certainly treat it. The best treatments are an aggressive surgical resection followed by radiation and chemotherapy. And there are lots of experimental studies going on right now with glioblastoma. And every meeting I go to, we all share data about what different ways we might be treating glioblastoma with in the future. And some are what we call intracavitary delivery, where we're actually injecting viruses into the tumor, tumor residual after surgery, or we're implanting radioactive devices nearby to try to radiate the tumor, or other things like immunotherapy, using the body's immune system to attack the tumor cells. Because believe it or not, tumor cells pop up in the body relatively commonly. And you think about it, your body has a trillion cells. The sporadic tumors might pop up now and again, but the immune system's really good at policing that and shutting those cells down. So using that immune system, either hyping up the immune system, getting it ready to look for that sort of tumor, or injecting things directly into the tumor, are ways that we're able to reduce tumor burden. We haven't gotten to cure yet. Every year there's more advances, and one of these days someone's going to get it right and I can retire from glioma surgery, and it'll be the happiest day of my career.
I love hearing that. You mentioned, as you said, just yesterday you were operating on a huge tumor that in a different era would have led to a really bad outcome. How does the location of a brain tumor impact your decisions in terms of how I'm going to approach something?
Well, this is more common sense than you might think. Something right on the surface, opening the skull is not hard. It's really not at all. You've seen it. It's not right. Complicated. But getting deep into the brain is, there's no area of the brain that doesn't matter. And there are areas that are very difficult to get to, particularly at the base of the skull. So the case I did yesterday was as deeply hidden as you can get, in an area we call the clivus, pushing into the brainstem with all of the cranial nerves around it, and the basilar artery, and all of these complex critical structures. So just getting there took 2.5 hours just to get there.
Wow.
And then you're operating in very, very tiny spaces with critical structures around everywhere under a microscope with very specialized tools. And some of these tools didn't exist 50 years ago. Frankly, the microscopes weren't very good either. And the image guidance technologies that we use now didn't exist till roughly 30, 35 years ago. So we keep bringing engineering advances into the operating room. In fact, neurosurgeons invent a lot of those engineering advances because we have to.
Got it.
Anytime we're frustrated in the operating room, it's an opportunity and an obligation to invent to solve that frustration.
You know, you have so much experience in doing all these brain tumor type of operations. What's the biggest innovation, speaking of those engineering, that you're just excited as you look to the future, you say, this is where we're likely going to go. And, you know, if God forbid I have to have an operation like this, this is going to be a huge game changer.
Very straightforward for me from a personal and I believe a national perspective, it's artificial intelligence. I very, very strongly believe that AI is going to bring advances in the basic science understanding of brain tumors, because we're talking about giant, giant databases and some very subtle patterns that humans really can't see. Standard statistics might not be able to figure out, but artificial intelligence will be able to help sort that out for us. And I also believe that artificial intelligence is going to be a great resource for surgeons who are going into the operating room and don't exactly know what would be the best way to approach this. And there have been some incredible breakthroughs just this year in neurosurgical artificial intelligence. And in fact, I was joking about, well, gosh, I want to live in Florida. I love Florida, but I'm really here because I have protected research time for artificial intelligence in neurosurgery. So I spend time now with the artificial intelligence team at Mayo, which is world class, coming up with new ideas and how to use artificial intelligence to advance neurosurgery.
Let me go to a much more human and personal question. This is also, for all the triumphs, I know that there will be heartache, like in any part of medicine. What do you do to kind of help get you through those rough days that our listeners, maybe they can incorporate that, but what's your approach in finding that emotional balance, if you will?
Well, I think first off, it's difficult to watch people suffer. You're a doctor, you know that. It's very difficult. Nonetheless, you can't look away. You don't want to harden yourself. But what you should do, and this is what the advice I give to young surgeons and residents and medical students, is just realize that it's a long, long battle and that you're going to win most of them. And some you're not going to win, but you need to be ready for the next one. So you can't let yourself get so down that you're out of the battle. You have to just keep on showing up every day and say, well, We're going to keep on doing research, and pretty soon we'll have solved this disease and no one will have to face it.
Dr. Byrne, in our last moment, I want to ask, what do you hope that a listener out there what insight will they take upon our conversation today regarding brain tumors or neurosurgery in general that you hope that they walk away from having listened to this?
I would say that brain tumors and neurosurgery are mysterious. Sometimes it seems scary from the outside. And that's understandable from the perspective of the last 100 years. 100 years ago, neurosurgery was just getting started. And the only person braver than a neurosurgeon was the patient who was willing to have neurosurgery 100 years ago, when the outcomes were much more troubling. It's come a long, long, long way. And most of these brain tumors, the benign brain tumors, we can cure or at least manage. And the malignant brain tumors, there are hundreds of labs looking for solutions for malignant brain tumors as we sit here today. And one of them will get it right. And it's going to be just a wonderful time, wonderful celebration when they do.
I hope that I am there to celebrate with you in that regard. Dr. Byrne, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule today to join us in studio. We are so happy here. I'll speak for the state of Florida that we have you and pulled you out of Chicago to help really the folks out here. We're just so delighted to have you here in town.
And I'm really happy to be here. It's a pleasure meeting you.
It is a pleasure meeting you too. We've been talking to Dr. Rich Byrne. He is professor of neurosurgery, a brain tumor and epilepsy surgery expert at Mayo Clinic in Florida. Up next, our weekly health headlines, then a look at financial wellness after traumatic brain injury. Our friends from the Wounded Warrior Project join us. And we'll be right back.
Summertime, and the living is easy. Fish are jumping. Garden is high. Oh, your daddy, he's rich.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Joe Servant, a practicing neurologist and professor of healthcare administration and policy. This is What's Health Got to Do with It. These are your weekly health headlines. record-breaking heat and its health impacts. 2023 was the hottest year in the Northern Hemisphere in 2,000 years, leading to a surge in heat-related illnesses and deaths. Heat can exacerbate heart issues, mental health conditions, and interact negatively with medications, highlighting the urgent need for climate action. An FAA bill to include overdose reversal medication. A bipartisan bill directing the FAA to update aircraft emergency medical kits with overdose reversal medication is headed to President Biden's desk, a move that could save lives during opioid emergencies that occur on flights. Sunscreen regulations are under scrutiny. European sunscreens, which offer better UV protection, are not available in the U.S. due to outdated animal testing laws. A pending bill aims to modernize these regulations, potentially allowing safer and more effective sunscreens into the market. Challenges in pig organ transplants. The first living kidney transplant from a pig to a human ended in the patient's death after 2 months, similar to previous pig heart transplants. Despite setbacks, researchers remain hopeful, learning valuable lessons for future cross-species transplants. Reevaluating life support decisions. A new study suggests waiting longer before withdrawing life support from patients with severe traumatic brain injuries. Findings indicate that 42% of patients who continued life support recovered significantly within a year, prompting calls for a more cautious decision-making. Public Citizen sues the FDA over antidepressant labels. The consumer advocacy group Public Citizen is suing the FDA for not updating antidepressant labels to warn about potential long-term sexual side effects, pushing for better informed patient choices. And those are your weekly health headlines. You know, over the course of my multi-decade medical career, when asked, what's the biggest change I've noticed with regards to patients' concerns? I definitely have to list how often I'm asked a financial question from my patients. Not so much financial advice, rather, what's the best value or least expensive approach to care? Truth be told, I was never asked this when I started my career, nor was I taught this topic in medical school. Now it's a daily question. As a neurologist, I've come to believe that you need good brain health to maintain wealth. Bottom line, health and wealth are intertwined. This is particularly true when dealing with a traumatic brain injury. Today, we're going to delve into the intricate intersection of health and financial wellness. Program managers from the Wounded Warrior Project are joining us to explore a topic often overshadowed: how traumatic brain injury can profoundly affect your financial wellness. Now, beyond the battlefield, traumatic brain injury's ripple effects can disrupt financial stability. But fear not, because our guests have some insights and strategies that are applicable to everybody. And hopefully you'll find some invaluable tips to fortify our financial resilience. Joining us in studio are Katie Axtell. She is an independence program manager at Wounded Warriors. She supports warriors with brain injuries, spinal cord injuries, and other neurological injuries. And Julie Suarez. She's an associate director of financial wellness, also at Wounded Warrior Project. She works with financial readiness in terms of helping provide financial education services, as well as financial assistance grants to our veterans. They both are in studio. Katie, Julie, welcome to our program.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. It's an honor to be here.
It's so good to have you both here. So I'm going to start with Katie. I'm going to start with you. So How does traumatic brain injury intersect with financial challenges for veterans?
Sure. I think when you're talking about brain injury, it's important to remember that oftentimes it's an invisible injury, and you don't necessarily see from the outside looking in the ramifications that it can have on how you function in your day-to-day living. And so when we're talking specifically about finances, it can really disrupt your ability to manage your budget, not overspend, remember how to pay your bills, take the step-by-step sequencing of a task such as bill paying, and not being able to follow those steps. And it can snowball and lead to overspending, mismanagement of money, and really also financial vulnerability for somebody who is trying to balance doing the day-to-day task like finance managing with a brain injury.
Got it. I could see it where it could spiral out of control, especially if you don't remember to pay the bills.
Yeah.
Overpayment charges, pulling out. I could see where that can easily happen. Julie, what do you think are the common misconceptions that someone surrounding traumatic brain injury may have on this topic, on financial wellness? Maybe it's not a misconception, any conception.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, just for some context to it, Wounded Warrior Project, we work with wounded, ill, and injured veterans post 9/11. And so we are fortunately pretty intimately familiar with kind of the, you know, regular challenges that our warriors are dealing with. And then when you add that layer of complexity with a brain injury, right, it definitely exacerbates or makes the challenges worse. So, I think the common misconception is that it's just a certain population or a certain group that struggles with this. But we've actually survey our warriors frequently, and over half of our warriors, not brain injury or no brain injury, have said that they've struggled making ends meet in the past year. So it's not just unique to a brain injury, but once you layer that on, right, you think about just the complexity of managing finances. It just isn't something we're taught, you know, basics, right, like you mentioned. And so then you add on the layer of complexity around, you know, to your point, you know, memory loss or even just impulsivity or just anxiety. And so at Wounded Warrior Project, our financial wellness program has a really tailored approach to a dedicated teammate, works with each warrior and their individual needs to make sure that we are really hearing their specific challenge. Like Katie mentioned, you know, their unique kind of injury and making sure we're meeting them where they're at to help tackle their goals.
So, Katie, I'm going to ask, with regards to coping mechanisms, what do you recommend? Maybe it, not only for our veterans, but I imagine anyone listening out there that may be curious, what are those coping mechanisms that you may recommend or help teach for individuals struggling with financial stress related to TBI? But maybe I'll just say to financial stress.
Yeah. Financial stress can trigger all sorts of other stressors.
Yep.
Your mental health, that can impact your physical health, that can impact your social health and well-being. And so it's at Wounded Warrior Project and Independence Program specifically, it's really important to have somebody in your corner who can help you recognize your barriers and your challenges and find the right tools to put in place to help you overcome those. One thing we really like to encourage our warriors to do is seek empowerment. So we try to empower them with different tools, such as financial education coaches, or having a case manager or a life skills coach. When you're adapting to a brain injury, your functioning is different than it was before. You may have been able to pay your bills prior to your injury with ease. And now just completing a task that you think should be so simple isn't so simple. And so making sure you have things like auto bill payment.
Yeah.
There are different apps that you can have on your smartphone and on your computer that can help you kind of make that more of an automatic process. And just making sure that you have the tools in place. It's okay to be frustrated. It's going to be probably harder than it used to be. You're going to have to work a little bit harder, but you can get there. It just takes connecting with a a financial coach or a social worker, somebody who can help you kind of put those pieces in order so that you can start taking the steps forward to adapt to this new way of completing these tasks that you have to complete.
Christy, speaking about the traumatic brain injury folks, the survivors, uniquely, are there specific financial resources that are tailored just for them?
Specific to
traumatic brain injury folks?
Yeah. So I would say warriors, veterans, humans that have had this experience and have this type of injury would just leverage, you know, as much technology as possible, but also to really just their support system. I think, you know, Katie and I collaborate often, and our teams do, about just making sure that we're really leveraging that support system for our warriors specifically at Wounded Warrior Project, but just humans, right? Like not having that shame factor about, you know, I should have this together, or I used to have this together, right, before a brain injury, but things have changed and that's okay. And you are not alone. And nobody's got this, right? We're all kind of in this together. So leveraging your kind of old school resources, right? Your family, your friends, whether sure. It's a caseworker, you know, if it's medical support as well, depending on how catastrophic the injury is.
Katie, I'm curious, you know, at the end, in order to have financial wellness, you still need money coming in. So my question is, how does traumatic brain injury influence employment prospects or income potential? What happens?
Sure. It can feel devastating. The job you once had may be harder to complete now, and the people you work with may not understand why you're having these new challenges that you're having with your memory and task completion. And so, yeah, I can absolutely feel how do I move forward from here? We really try to encourage the warriors that we work with to find a safe person that maybe if they're working, that their manager or supervisor, that they can confide in and share their challenges and hope and seek and the support from their employer that should be there to help protect them and be able to adapt to the challenges that they have now. Within Wounded Warrior Project, a lot of our warriors no longer work. Their work was in the military, and right. Because of the severity of their brain injury, they're unable to work. So what's important then is connecting to meaningful activities, finding your purpose. You were in the military, and you served this incredible purpose, and now you, as a civilian, get to take that and apply it to things that you're interested in here. And so The advantage for Independence Program warriors is they have a case manager who can help set goals. And it's really just about identifying your purpose and what you want to accomplish and just step by step going from there to get to that end goal, which today what we're talking about is financial freedom. So for our warriors, that looks like working with the VA, mm-hmm. Working with a benefits team who can make sure you're getting all of the VA benefits you should be getting and should have been receiving since the time of your injury.
Christy, let me ask you this. One of the issues in all families across the world is that the moment you start talking finances, my goodness, that is like throwing kerosene on a fire. Arguments, issues. So my question is a simple one. What strategies can caregiver, friends, families employ or use to support TBI survivors financially? And I'll add my piece, and to keep the peace.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And, you know, I would say, I mean, just normalizing the conversation, you know, ironically, just chatting with a colleague today about how, you know, we're far more comfortable about talking about our mental health than we yes. are a lot of times our finances. And so we really need to just normalize the conversation, right? And just make sure that people know we're in their corner and this is not a gotcha moment. We're not trying, you know, their family's not trying to pin them down, but trying to help and support and just being vulnerable. At Wounded Warrior Project, Project in our financial wellness program, we actually collaborate very often with a lot of our mental health programs, even our, you know, Project Odysseys and some others where they really focus on that communication component. Right. And just really having those conversations. So bringing it down to basic level, like what is the intent of this conversation, keeping positive intent, but learning how to communicate. We have some really neat seminars and other budgeting tips and things that we work with our warriors on. But some of the most popular conversations are just, how do I talk to my spouse about money? How do I talk to my significant other or partner about this without it becoming, you know, heated or intense. Right. So I think just bringing it back to the basics, knowing that you have positive intent as that partner and just keeping a safe space without judgment. And I think that can really be productive for warriors. And especially if you have a brain injury, making sure, like Katie said, talking to someone who has so much respect for the challenge that you're experiencing, understands some of the struggles you're going through. So you have that safe space to start the conversation.
And to all of our listeners out there, you're listening to What's Health Got to Do With It on WJCT News 89.9. I'm Dr. Joe Servin, and if you're just joining us, we're talking about the relationship between traumatic brain injury and financial wellness. And we want to hear from you. If you have an idea for future shows, tag me on X at JServin. Katie, I talked about employment. How does TBI affect the other big issue that comes into money, and that's insurance coverage and access to healthcare? This is one of the big things we cover on this show. What happens in TBI and healthcare coverage?
I can only speak to the Wounded Warrior Project perspective.
Sure.
In terms of working with the VA and having insurance through TRICARE and the different resources that are available as a veteran. Fortunately, we now know that traumatic brain injury is a signature wound of the past 20 plus years of, right. of war. And so the awareness of looking for the symptoms and the challenges and the screenings and the testings and neuropsych evaluations and making sure that you have a provider who is willing and able to have that conversation with you if you're noticing that you are experiencing the challenges of a brain injury cognitively, emotionally, and it's impacting your ability to function independently. And I'm sorry I can't speak sure. past the Wounded Warrior Project perspective,
okay.
but for a veteran, it's very important to be connected with your local VA and work with Wounded Warrior Project and our benefits team to make sure you are connected to the right providers and getting the right services to address your brain injury and cognitive rehabilitation and alternative therapies, different supports that are available for you. With a severe injury comes an increase in medical bills, and that can be very scary.
Sure.
And so we always aim to support the veterans any way we can to fill the gaps of services that are not available, whether that's a home health aide who helps you with keeping your house organized and bathing and things that maybe used to be easy but aren't anymore, but also with life skills coaches and helping you know who to reach out to also is part of it. And one thing I meant to mention earlier for a resource, most states have a brain injury waiver program, not just for veterans, for anybody. And so if you search for Florida Brain Injury Waiver Program, there are some pretty good resources that they're able to help connect you with as well, including sometimes some soft case management to help oh. get you plugged into maybe a financial coach or helping expand upon the tools that are available for you. And so I know we're talking specifically about veterans, but brain injury waiver programs are usually a pretty good resource to reach out to as well.
That's a great tip. Julie, I want to kind of follow up, and we've heard about several programs with your organization, but, you know, sometimes it's just nice hearing success stories. Can you share any success story of some TBI survivors who have overcome their financial hurdles through these programs?
I would love to. Yes, we actually just had a warrior that we assisted. He was an Army veteran with a severe TBI. on a fixed income, right? So speaking of kind of that, you know, stuck at a certain level and how do I manage my finances? And so for about 12 years, his injury has caused him to make basic financial mistakes, missing payments, causing like huge issues, right, with credit and all of those things. He took our free financial workshops at Wounded Warrior Project. He completed our financial readiness program, so budgeting, all of the things. And in just 7 months, he was able to tackle the debt that he owed. He closed on a home. He bought a new car, he put money into savings, and he now manages his finances independently.
Wow.
So that is like pie in the sky, beautiful success story, just such a lovely, lovely positive impact that we've had on that warrior's life and the work that he put in and his support team put in. And, you know, not every case spins around like that all the time. And sometimes that's not the goal even, right? Sometimes the goal is just some little smaller things, smaller steps. And we're here for all of that and everything in between.
I love it. I love stories like that. Katie, what, you know, to our listeners out there, they may be wondering, what proactive steps can individuals take to safeguard their financial future?
Yeah.
In the face of this? I mean, is there stuff we should all be doing, even if I know we're not veterans, but just in general?
Yes. This is a topic we have really been diving into on the independence program team at Wounded Warrior Project, and it's a holistic approach to long-term planning. So we're really trying to answer the question of what if? What if my caregiver cannot support me in the future? What if my challenges worsen and I can't care for myself anymore? So there are a few services that we have found and really recommend and are also able to provide for these veterans, estate planning. Any type of legal long-term planning, estates, your wills, having your legal affairs in order to know what's going to happen to your housing and to your assets when you need it if something happens. That also includes having a long-term financial care planner. So we have the luxury of being able to provide that to our warriors through different companies and practices. And so, you know, through banking institutions, somebody who is, that's their job. It's their job to help look at your finances and say, not just right now, but in 10 years, in 20 years, what is it going to look like for you financially?
I love that. And Julie, as we get into our final moments, what projects do you want to highlight from your organization, Wounded Warriors Project, regarding this topic? What do you want to make sure folks take away from our conversation?
It's a great question. So many, right? We
right.
are a very dynamic, evolving organization that really is meeting the needs of our warriors now, but also thinking into the future, right? So really just being mindful of where are our warriors now, and how can we make sure that we're going to meet the need in the future? Because our warriors are going to continue to age and their needs are going to evolve and grow. So we have a number of projects, but I would say that just a theme overall is really just being very thoughtful about collaborating internally with all of our programs and leaning in where we are seeing our warriors express certain needs. So we know there's a direct link between mental health and financial wellness, right? And being really mindful of that, whether you have a brain injury or don't, the stress that comes with that and anxiety and those things. So we are being front and center. We are partnering with the first-in-class organizations externally. Wounded Warrior Project can't be at all to everybody, right? We know that we have to get partners in the community that are the best at what they do. And so whether it's partnering with organizations like Katie mentioned through the Independence Program or financial institutions, right, that understand the specific needs of someone with a brain injury and are willing to be patient and take the time to dedicate to that case and that warrior, that individual.
Katie, last word. What advice would you want to make sure our listeners take home from this conversation, whether regarding TBI survivors and other warriors or in general?
Sure. I think sometimes we all need this reminder. Don't give up.
Yeah.
It feels hard, and it probably is, but there are people here who are in your corner and we're willing to fight with you and fight for you. And there's no shame in raising your hand and saying, hey, I need a little bit of help here. It's so vital to focus on your holistic well-being. And whether that first step is through financial education to get your finances leveled out, or mental health support, or peer connection to other people who have similar experiences in life that you do that you can just relate to, raising your hand and saying, hey, can you guys help me out a little bit? That's what we're here for. We're here to honor you. We're here to empower you. It is our pleasure and our honor to support you. So please don't hesitate to let us know if there's anything that you have questions about or anything that we can do to help get you in that right direction.
Love that hopeful note. I want to thank you, Katie Axtell, and you, Julie Suarez, for joining us today. This is fantastic work that you all are doing, and I know you've helped a lot of people today.
Thanks for having us, Dr. Joe. We appreciate it. It's been an honor.
You bet. We've been talking to Katie Axtell. She is an Independence Program Manager, and Julie Suarez. She is Associate Director of Financial Wellness, both with the Wounded Warrior Project. Well, that's our program for today. We hope you've enjoyed our show. As a Cuban American, I leave you with more of the classic Celia Cruz song to remind us of those we've lost to brain tumors. If you missed anything, you can listen to the full episode at WJCT.org and on your favorite podcast app. Thanks to all of our guests. Our executive producer is David Luckin. Stacey Bennett is our producer. Brady Corum is our director. Jamie Vallee is our associate producer. Next week's program is a special show looking at the latest in Alzheimer's and life as a caregiver. If you have questions about this or any topic, let us know by calling us at 904-358-6362, email us at health@wjct.org, or tag me on X or LinkedIn at Jay Servin. I'm Dr. Joe Servin, and you're listening to What's Health Got to Do With It on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. Thank you for listening, and stay in touch.
Sponsored in part by Eli Lilly and Company. Is migraine impacting your life or daily activities 4 or more days per month? If so, ask your healthcare professional if you are a candidate for migraine prevention treatments and which ones might be best for you. Learn more at thinkmigraine.com. The American Brain Foundation. For over 30 years, the foundation has worked with researchers to discover better treatment, prevention, and cures for brain diseases and disorders. Imagine life without brain disease. Learn more at AmericanBrainFoundation.org. And ReThreaded restores choice and breaks the cycle of generational trauma for survivors of human trafficking in Jacksonville, Florida, through business. You can help. Learn more about ReThreaded survivor-created goods at the storefront or ReThreaded.com/shop.